Couldn't be out riding around at will, working on his rebellion. Her breath caught.
His rebellion?
Justin nodded. He wants to knock the king off the throne so he can take it for himself.
Who is he?
Now his sardonic expression was very pronounced. He watched her, as though curious to see if she would believe him. Marlord Halcon Giseltas, brother to the Lestra. Chapter 13. It seemed to Justin that Neft was suddenly the most popular destination in Gilengaria. First, Eleanor had been there an entire week, and every day she had managed to get free and come spend a little time at the stables. Justin couldn't believe how much he looked forward to her visits, how much they found to talk about. He was not used to having long conversations with anybody, let alone someone he scarcely knew, let alone a woman. And yet there was so much to tell her, there was so much to learn. Every time she left, he remembered something else he'd meant to ask, something else he should have said. Every time she left, he was afraid he might not see her again. Every time she returned, his relief was almost as profound as his delight. She was gone from the city now, but she had seemed hopeful she would be able to return eventually.
Sarah Paulina told me she can sense that she'll have a relapse as soon as I'm back at the convent, she had said with a laugh. I hope the Lestra will feel obliged to humor her.
I'll miss you.
Oh, and I'll miss you, too. I'm so sad already, and I haven't left yet.
Stay away from Halcon Giseltas, he recommended. If he's at the convent now, keep clear of him.
What do you think he'd do to me? Does he have a reputation for hurting young women?
I don't know about that. Just stay away from him. He's a bad person, a terrible man.
She didn't laugh at him. She didn't ask him how he knew or what exactly the Marlord was guilty of. All right, she said. I know how to make myself disappear. He won't notice me.
Good.
Neither of them had known how to say goodbye. Surely they should not hug, and a handshake seemed faintly ridiculous. So he had just put his big palms on her delicate shoulders and smiled down at her.
Take care. And I mean that, truly. Watch yourself.
You too. Don't get into any fights defending some other girl's honor. Another laugh, a wave, and she was gone. He'd felt a little off balance ever since. But her arrival and departure, much as they disturbed his peace, didn't shake him up as much as the appearance of Halcon Giseltas. What was he doing off his estates? Why was he in Neft, stopping here briefly on his way to see his sister, no doubt, to discuss what?
Formulate what kind of dreadful plans. Justin had to get word to Gosenhall.
He was reluctant to put sensitive news in a letter and send it with a courier he did not absolutely trust. Fortunes had changed hands many times because of a dangerous missive gone awry. He would have to be careful about committing any words to paper. Fortunately, 2 days after Halcon passed through, one of Taze's messengers arrived. He was a young man from the king's civil guard, not a rider and probably never good enough to be a rider, but earnest and enthusiastic and eager to do his best. Justin sat with him an hour, giving him concise details about the things he'd seen and guessed so far, and sent him on his way the next morning. It chafed him to have to sit still in Neft, awaiting word from Taze. Surely he had seen enough by now to know Coralinda Giseltas was plotting against the king. Surely the fact that men of her guard were murdering nobles in their homes was reason enough to have King Baron move against her. Surely there was very little else Justin needed to stay here to learn. But if he was called back to Gosenhall, he would never see Eleanor again. He didn't want to stay. It was so strange to realize that, even more, he didn't want to leave. 3 days after Eleanor left, another visitor arrived in Neft. This one, even more welcome than Taze's messenger. Justin was alone in the stalls, checking a horse's legs for injuries when he heard an imperious voice raised outside.
"Hey there, boy! Boy! Isn't there anybody who works here? Will someone come take my horse?"
He straightened, left the stall, and hurried out toward the front, a grimace on his face the whole time. It sounded like some rich, fat old noblewoman who wasn't used to waiting, who was about to leave him with some high-strung animal that would take half the night to settle. Hard to believe a woman like that would be traveling alone, wouldn't have servants with her, who could lead the horse to its quarters for the night, while she made herself comfortable in the only truly respectable inn the city offered. But when he emerged into fading daylight, he found that the new arrival was indeed all alone. He'd been wrong about the fat part, but he'd gotten the rest of it right. She was an elderly woman, white-haired and scowling, but sitting poker straight on the back of a magnificent night-black stallion. She was dressed in silk and velvet, a fortune in jewels around her throat, and even the horse's bridle looked expensive. When she saw him, she tossed her head and allowed a look of distaste to cross her patrician features.
"Are you the only one here?"
she asked, in accents of disgust.
"You don't look like you could be trusted to run the kennels, let alone manage a spirited animal like mine."
Justin had the lowest possible opinion of the nobility, but such rudeness was almost unprecedented.
"I can be trusted," he said, in a level voice. "How long will you be staying?"
Her scornful glance swept over what part of Neft she could see from this admittedly inferior district.
"As short a time as possible. A day, perhaps two."
"We'll be happy to feed and water your horse for you. Groom him, too, but that's extra."
Her attention returned to him. She appeared to be sneering.
"I can pay for any services you might see fit to offer," she said bitingly. "Now, help me from the saddle, gutter boy."
Justin had automatically raised his arms to lift her down, but at that, he froze. Impossible to tell by looking, of course, but he stared up at her a moment, letting his arms drop to his sides.
"Kira?" he asked in a disbelieving voice.
"Kira? What? Is that some kind of insult, boy?"
she demanded. But she couldn't restrain the laughter anymore.
"Help me down," I said, "or I'll turn you into a field mouse and you'll be eaten by some kind of horrid creature."
"Kira!"
he exclaimed. Now he grabbed her from the saddle and hauled her down, swinging her around in a circle so wildly that she actually squealed.
"Who'd have believed that I'd actually be happy to see you? What are you doing in Neft?"
"Put me down. Ow! You're bruising my ribs. Put me down!"
He did, but not until he'd given her a little scare, tossing her up in the air a few inches and catching her. He spun around to give the black horse an appraising look.
"And is this Donnell? I suppose it must be."
The horse gave a whinny and pulled his mouth back, the equine version of a smile.
"You shouldn't let her treat you this way," he said, leaning in as if to whisper a secret in the horse's ear.
Donnell was Kira's constant companion, no matter what shape he took.
"You're her horse. You're her dog. You need to remind her once in a while that you're a man."
"Oh, we were both wolves just this morning," Kira said.
She had looked over her shoulder as if to be certain that no one was close enough to be watching, and even as she spoke, she began a gradual transformation. The white hair turned gold. The pinched features grew youthful and gracious. When Donald changed shapes, the alteration was so quick it was almost instantaneous. But Kira shifted slowly enough that you could watch her body melt and reshape and redefine.
"We only donned our present disguises for your benefit." "What are you doing in Neft?"
"Tay said if we happened to be down by Nocklin, we should drop in on you," she said carelessly. "And I said, well, it's out of my way, of course, and I don't much like Justin, but if it's important to you, Taze—"
He felt himself grinning. Kira Danilustris was an amazingly beautiful woman once she stood there inhabiting her own skin, but she was so wayward and so irritating that Justin had always been able to overlook her physical attractions. Indeed, the first 3 months he'd known her, he would have said he hated her. He still didn't understand how it was that they were actually friends, of a sort.
"Well, if you're returning to Gosenhall, you can take a message for me," he said. "I just gave a report to one of Taze's men, but you could probably make it back more quickly."
"Probably not," she said. "We were just in Gosenhall, then Rappengrass, and I think it's time to head back to Dannon Hall." She glanced around. "Is there any urgent news from sleepy little Neft?"
"Helcon Gieseltess passed through a few days ago," he said, and had the satisfaction of seeing her grow instantly serious.
"He did? But isn't he under guard at Gieselplain?"
"Apparently not, and there's been all sorts of action down at the convent. If you—"
She stopped him with a lifted hand. "I want to hear it all. I do, but I'm starving. Can you tell me over dinner?"
"Of course," he said. "We can go to the tap room, but—" He debated a moment. "Are you going to go as yourself?"
"What? Why shouldn't I?"
"Well, the story I put out when I got here is that I left some Marlord's service because of a fight over his daughter."
He saw the look of mocking delight on her face and added, "It was Cammon's idea. Anyway, if someone sees you, they might think you're the one I was trying to seduce." "But Justin, I've just been waiting for you to try," she said soulfully. "All this time I thought, oh, if only Justin would notice that I'm a woman, and a woman who cares about him." He grinned.
"Particularly as one day someone asked me which Saramara I'd been involved with, and the only ones I really know are from Danilustris."
"My father will be thrilled," she informed him. "A match with a king's rider, while shockingly unequal, would still be better than a match with a peasant's son." She glanced at Donal, "who looks like a horse."
"And then a few weeks ago I made friends with a novice from the convent, and I've seen her a few times," he went on, a little self-consciously now. "So, if you show up all of a sudden and start going to tap rooms with me, well, people might notice how many women seem to be in my life."
She had stepped back, and was now gazing at him with a lurking smile.
"Justin, a novice from the convent? You have exceeded expectations. Come instantly and tell me everything. I'm starving, but this is a story I absolutely must hear."
He gestured at the horse. "But about Donal, he can't exactly come like that."
She was laughing.
"Lead us into the stables, gutter boy. We'll both change into shapes a little more appropriate."
20 minutes later, Justin was back at almost exactly the same table he'd sat at with Eleanor, sharing a meal with yet another woman masquerading as a man. Kira's disguise, however, was more convincing. She'd kept her fair coloring and aristocratic features, but taken on weight, added some stubble, altered her clothes, and deepened her voice. It was amazing how easy it was still to think of her as Kira. Perhaps because Justin had seen her take so many shapes and retain, through every modification, her essential personality. Sunny, charming, and lawless. Donal, on the other hand, was dark as the horse he'd first appeared to be, but far sleeker. He was of medium stature, with dark hair and eyes, a close beard, and a taciturn nature. He was almost as unlikely to talk, whether he was fashioned as man or beast. His quiet intensity was a welcome counterfoil to Kira's bright restlessness.
"So," Kira said, "what's been going on here?"
He described in detail the days he had spent spying on the convent and following the Lestra's guardsmen the night they went burning down houses. Kira looked exceedingly grim at the news. "I hadn't heard that story yet. I wonder if it's made its way to Gosenhall. Do you know whose house it was?"
"Southern Nochlin. I can describe the place and the people I talked to, but—" he shrugged. I don't know the nobility.
Well, this is proof, if Senneth wanted any, that the Lestra is engaged in murder. I can't imagine that Baron can just overlook such actions.
But if royal guards can't keep Elkon on his estates, how would the king be able to control the daughters? Justin demanded. When so many people worship the Pale Mother and would do anything the Lestra demanded.
Donald looked up.
There are a few who fear the Pale Mother too, and the daughters, he said in his quiet voice. If they fear the goddess more than they fear the king, they will act for the convent and not for the crown.
And what's going on in Gosenhall anyway? Justin said, a note of complaint in his voice.
I haven't heard any kind of important news.
Well, Kira said, folding her hands around her glass of beer. There was a summit recently. Most of the Marlords were there, and 13th House Lords from all over the realm. It was organized by the Regent. She gave Justin a fleeting glance and returned her attention to her hands. Last summer, Kira had fallen madly in love with Romar Brendan, the King's Regent and a married man. The affair had almost ended her friendship, or whatever you'd call it, with Donal, and had most certainly broken her heart. In fact, Justin had not seen her since she had broken off the relationship with the regent and returned to Den Illustris, Donal at her side. Time had healed some of the worst wounds, it seemed. Justin didn't feel he could ask her for all the details as long as Donal was sitting next to her. Nothing of any real significance was decided at the conference, she went on. The Marlords, as might be expected, strenuously resisted any notion of giving up control of even the smallest portions of their lands. The king remained entirely neutral, but there seemed to be... The overall feeling was one of hope, I thought. Hope that things might begin to change, now that there were actually public discussions of the topic. Romar encouraged the Marlords to make lists of properties they might be willing to sign over, and the lesser lords to make lists of the properties they most coveted. I have no doubt at all that nothing on these lists will match, but it's a start.
So someday we might have 15 houses, or 20? Justin said. That will seem strange to you.
Yes, I can see why a street urchin such as yourself would care that the social order was about to be upended, she said in an affable voice.
He grinned. And your father? How did Marlord Malcolm express his views?
You just simply never know what my father will do or say. Give up control of an acre of Den Illustris? I couldn't imagine him willingly doing such a thing. But he sat there and wrote four names on a piece of paper and handed it to Romar while the rest of the Marlords were still muttering into their wine. All I can think is that he doesn't really believe the transfer of ownership will occur. Otherwise, why would he be so tame? My father would fight to the death to protect Den Illustris.
What about your sister? Was she there?
Kasara, to cross the border and leave Den Illustris?
Are you mad?
Kira exclaimed. Of course she wasn't there. I assume she and my father discussed matters before he left. Or not. They think alike, in the strangest ways. Sometimes I don't understand either of them.
Donald shrugged.
They think a strong 13th house makes the realm content, and a content realm keeps Den Illustris undisturbed, he said. Not so hard to understand.
And that actually is the only thing that makes sense, Kira said with a sigh.
Justin sipped his beer. So, you went to this conference with your father? He said. I thought you were off someplace doing miraculous healing. She smiled at him.
Doran Isle. We were there almost 3 weeks before I met my father in Gosenhall.
So? All those people who were sick, could you cure them?
All except the stupid ones, Donald said.
Justin glanced between them.
What's that mean?
Kira made a motion with her hands. There were a few who were afraid to undergo my form of treatment, which I admit was rather extreme. They were afraid to be turned into dogs and horses so the other healers could administer drugs that worked.
Afraid of mystics? Donald growled. Or despising them?
Kira nodded. Those who agreed all recovered.
That's wonderful, Justin exclaimed. You must have felt pretty pleased with yourself by the time you left.
She laughed. You know, I did. I felt like I had done something worthwhile and important and good. Not all my days hold such unselfish rewards.
There's a price, though, Donald said. People left the island carrying the tale. Who knows, maybe even the Lestra has heard it by now. One more reason for people to fear us.
Kira sighed. They feared us anyway. Maybe now a few more people have reason to love us.
The serving girl came by their table to see if they wanted more to drink. Kira and Justin both said yes, but Donald said no.
I'm tired, the dark-haired man said, shaking off a yawn. I need to sleep.
Where are you putting up? Justin asked. I've got a room if you need a bed. Not very plush, but tolerable.
Thank you. I bespoke accommodations at an inn before I came looking for you, Kira said. She tossed Donald the room key. I'll be back within an hour. Just the idea of sleeping on a real bed. I don't think I can resist much longer.
Donald nodded and left the table. Justin waited until their glasses had been refilled before he asked another question.
So, how does it go between you and Donald?
He hadn't been sure Kira would answer. They were not exactly used to confiding in each other, but she didn't respond with either a jest or a sarcastic comment. Instead, her face became thoughtful, a little rueful, and she tapped her fingers against her glass. "Mostly it goes very well," she said at last. "I know him better than I know any person, any creature, in the kingdom. He knows the thoughts in my head before I express them. I cannot imagine anyone more suited to me, anyone who could love me more."
She looked up, her blue eyes direct. Even in the partially disguised face, her eyes were still unmistakably Kira's.
"But I can imagine other ways, other lovers. I remember how I felt about Romar, even if he does not remember how much he loved me. It is hard to give my whole heart. Donald has such a very, very big part of it, but I have kept a little bit for myself."
"Maybe he's kept a fraction of his own heart and decided not to give it to your careless hands," she smiled then.
"Maybe. But Donald has never been very good at keeping anything from me if I decided I wanted it."
"And Romar?"
"We haven't talked, or no more than our social positions required. During the summit, sometimes he would look at me and I would see this sort of puzzlement in his eyes, like he knew there was something about me he'd forgotten, something important, a secret I told him once or a dreadful thing he saw me do, but he couldn't remember."
She shook her head. "It's better that he doesn't remember." Justin didn't have all the details, but he did know that Kira had used some potent spell to erase herself from the regent's heart. He found it a little frightening that it was something she was able to do, was willing to do.
"And what if the magic wears off someday? What if he suddenly sees you and every memory returns?"
"I suppose I'll deal with that day when it comes, but I don't think it will be soon."
She sipped from her glass, but did not look as if she tasted the beer.
"Anyway, he will have much else to preoccupy him soon. His wife is expecting their first child sometime next year, and perhaps more will be on the way after that."
Justin drank from his own glass, thinking. "Don't ever do that to me," he said finally. "Go into my head. Change things around."
"Justin, you're impervious. Nobody's magic could get past your thick skull,"
he grinned. "I know enough about your magic to know that's not true."
She shook off the pensive mood and gave him one of her wide, mischievous smiles.
"But let's talk about something far more interesting. Tell me about this girl, this novice. How did you meet her, and what is going on?"
"Rescued her on the street one day when a drunkard tried to steal a kiss. We made friends."
She widened her eyes and nodded in an encouraging way. "Yes, and I need more details." He fidgeted. He wanted to pour out the whole story, recount every conversation, and dissect the significance of every one of Eleanor's sidelong glances. He needed someone with more experience to explain to him what all of this might mean. And yet he didn't want to repeat a word. He wanted to hoard every sentence, every laugh, in the closed storeroom of his heart. "She came to the convent to be with her cousin. She's not a fanatic like the Lestra and so many of the novices. She's never been away from home before, not this far anyway. And she comes from some backcountry part of the world where they don't have much in the way of shops and restaurants and commerce. She thinks Neft is a big city. But she's not... that makes her sound like some kind of yokel, but she has a sort of wisdom. There's a kind of peacefulness to her. Oh, and kindness. The Lestra sent her back to town last week to take care of this sick old woman, and I could tell how gently she's treating this old lady, how she's come to care for the woman, even in just a few days. Everything interests her. Everything she sees in Neft, everything I tell her, she just absorbs everything. I wish I could talk to her every day." He fell silent, conscious of doing a poor job, of not describing Eleanor with any accuracy at all. "She makes me talk about myself. She makes me like talking," he wanted to add, but that seemed stupid, irrelevant. That wasn't about Eleanor at all. Kira was smiling at him, the expression on her face wondering, with only the faintest trace of teasing. "But, Justin, you sound like you've fallen in love with her." Maybe she expected him to vehemently deny it. She looked surprised when he showed her an anxious face.
"Does it?"
"I don't know," he said quietly. "I don't know what it's like to fall in love. I don't know how you're supposed to feel. But I can't remember feeling like this before, around any of the women I ever knew. You or Seneth or the women among the riders, I like you all. Well, not you, not all the time, but you're all my friends. This girl is my friend too, but somehow it feels different."
"What's her name?"
"Eleanor."
"What does she look like?"
"Dark, small. I guess you'd say she's delicate. She has the littlest hands. Her face is... at first, I thought she was only pretty, but now when I see her, I think she's beautiful."
He looked at Kira, as if daring her to call his comment ridiculous, but she merely nodded.
"Where does she come from? What part of Gilengaria?"
He shook his head.
"I don't know. I don't think she wants to tell me."
Kira raised her eyebrows.
"Secrets?
That's not so good." He snorted.
"Well, it's not like I'm not hiding things from her."
"Yes, but secrets can get you killed. And Justin, she's a novice at the convent, where people like her are trained to hate people like me."
"I don't think she hates mystics," he said.
"You don't sound so sure."
"We haven't discussed it, exactly."
"Well, you might see if you can find out how she does feel about magic." "Exactly."
I think she's a little uneasy at the situation she's found herself in," he said. "I think she's not sure the Lestra will ever let her leave, will let any of them leave, and she's feeling a little trapped."
"So, a trapped, desperate, beautiful woman with secrets turns for help to a solitary man who appears to be something of a drifter, who obviously has some skill with a sword, and who's already proved he's willing to fight for her honor. If I were a more cynical woman, I'd say you were being carefully manipulated by someone with a deep agenda. As it is, wild mother watch me. Justin, these are troubled waters."
"You don't know her," he said. "How can you say something like that? She's..."
"I'd bet my life she's exactly as she seems."
"That's exactly what you could be betting," Kira said. "Make sure you know the stakes."
He He gave her a long, serious look. She stared back at him from her boy's face, waiting for whatever he would say next.
"I can't see that it matters," he said, trying to keep his voice casual. He even shrugged. "I mean, you think I'm falling in love with her, and maybe that's true. I don't know. But why would she fall in love with me? Who am I? What would I even have to offer a woman? I'm nothing but a sword arm and a pack of muscle. I've never been anything else. Never will be anything else. I don't know why she'd want to be with me."
For a moment, Kira's disguise actually wavered. He saw her true face flicker across her cheeks as her eyes softened, and she laid a hand on his arm.
"Justin, don't say such a thing."
He pulled away, because people might be watching.
"It's true."
"It's not true. You have so much more to offer than a sword. Intelligence. Loyalty. You have... You are... You don't give up. You're... Well, I've always thought of you as dogged, but I mean that in the best sense. If something matters to you, you can't be turned aside. And if this girl matters to you..." She shook her head. "Nothing I say will keep you from her. I just hope she deserves your heart if you decide to lay it at her feet."
"I don't know if I'll get the chance to find out. I don't know if I'll see her again. She's back in the convent now, and who knows when she'll get a chance to return to Neft. And it's not like I can go visit her there."
Kira had her facade under control now, but she was still watching him. He thought he had rarely seen her so serious.
"If you want to see her again, Justin, I'm sure you'll find a way."
In the morning, Justin told Dells he had business to attend to, and he joined Kira and Donnell a few miles outside of town. Neft was situated in the middle of flatlands that offered little vegetation besides spiky trees and cluttered undergrowth. They had to go some distance to be out of sight of the main road. When they were in a small, brushy valley that seemed completely safe from observation, they dropped their belongings and their basket of food.
"You realize Taze will kill me if he ever realizes I've done this," Kira said cheerfully.
"Any number of people want to kill you for any number of reasons," Justin replied. "Let's not worry about Taze."
Last night, before they had parted, she had agreed to practice her shape-changing skills on him. Again. It was strictly forbidden for shiftlings to transform any humans but themselves, and in fact most shiftlings didn't even have the magic necessary to do so. But Kira had learned the spells, and she had obviously turned them to good account this summer as she visited the patients on Doran Isle. Justin was the first person she had ever changed from man to beast, and she had twice turned him into a shaggy yellow hound. He had loved the sensation of being four-footed and fleet, bounding across a field with a wholly foreign kind of energy. He had loved the rich scents that tickled his nose, the distant sounds that played distinctly across his ears. Today, they were trying something else. Kira was going to turn him into a bird.
"It won't do you any good to watch Donald transform, but watch him anyway," Kira instructed,
and almost before the words were out of her mouth, Donnell was a crow. His obsidian feathers glinted in the weak sunlight. His eyes were an unblinking black.
"Now, watch the way he moves. See him lift his wings? Pay attention to how he moves his weight. Notice the placement of his eyes on either side of his head. You won't see things the way you normally see them. You won't be looking straight in front of you."
"All right," said Justin impatiently. "Just change me, now."
She laid her hands on his shoulders and pushed him down so they were both crouching in the yellowed grass. He could feel the heat in her hands, saw the intense strain on her face as she called up her power. His own body strung with a sudden tension, then his chest was crushed with pressure. He felt himself gasping for breath, unable to take it in. His hands balled into fists, or tried to. His fingers wouldn't curl. He had no fingers. He had no hands. The world whirled and shifted, grew monstrous, grew strange. He couldn't see, he couldn't think, he couldn't speak. He opened his mouth to cry out, and only a harsh cawing noise ripped from his throat. Then suddenly he felt fine. Light, hollow, warm, but insubstantial. He twisted his head, trying to get a look at himself, but it was hard to see more than a sweep of black, a thin, mottled leg. His body was so weightless that almost any movement set him in motion, hopping to one side, unfurling his wings to keep his balance. His wings! He had wings! He was a bird. There were two other birds nearby, chattering at him as if trying to communicate, but the sounds would not resolve themselves into sense. One was a crow, one some rare red-feathered creature clearly too glamorous to exist in such a meadow. That one had to be Kira. The crow flapped its wings and took off in a smooth glide, circling once over the clearing and coming in for a flawless landing. The scarlet creature chirped at Justin as if to say, "You see?" and did her own graceful takeoff, swirl, and landing. It didn't look hard at all. Justin ruffled his feathers, hopped again, he couldn't seem to help it, and threw himself into the air, and careened wildly through a mild breeze, almost crashed into a squat tree, somersaulted over a boulder, and fell awkwardly onto the soft earth. Instantly, the other two birds crowded around him, pelting him with incoherent exclamations. He was afraid that Kira would decide this stunt was too perilous and turn him back into his natural state, so he righted himself quickly, gave them both a baleful stare from his left eye, and practiced a little strutting walk over the uneven ground. He was fine. Nothing was broken. He just did not understand the principles of flight yet. Kira was still following him, asking him urgent, indecipherable questions, but he ignored her. He spread his wings to their fullest, tried to gauge their power. He was used to working in utter harmony with his body. He knew exactly what his strengths and limits were, just not this body. He would try again. His second attempt at flight was slightly better, still clumsy but more controlled. At any rate, he landed where he wanted to, head up, and every feather intact. All right. That time it had made a little more sense. He could do this. He just needed more practice. Over the next 2 hours, Justin took progressively longer and more successful forays around the clearing. He still looked like a drunken bumblebee, he thought, at the mercy of any strong wind and wholly incapable of such maneuvers as landing on a tree branch, but he was getting the trick of it. Give him a few more days and he'd be able to take this shape to travel across Gilengaria. "I think that's enough for one lesson," Kira said, materializing in human form as Justin took a somewhat longer break. He tried to explain to her that he wasn't ready to change back yet, but his words came out as an agitated twitter. She didn't seem to have any trouble guessing what he was trying to convey, however. "I don't care what you want. I want to turn you back into a man while you're still more or less whole." He didn't move away fast enough, and she cupped her hands around his small, trembling body. Again, that sense of heat and pressure, and then the world seemed to tilt and melt around him. He closed his eyes, taking a hard breath against a searing discomfort, and suddenly he was kneeling on the ground, his head resting against Kira's palms, every bone and muscle of his body stretched with pain. "Ow," he said, not opening his eyes. "This hurts more than I thought it would." She pulled her hands away and knelt there until he opened his eyes. "I think you got pretty battered. I probably let that go on too long," she said. "Look, you've already got a bruise on your arm." He tugged back his sleeves to do a quick inventory, then sat and turned up the legs of his trousers. Oh, yes, nicks and bruises everywhere, and the soles of his feet felt like he'd stomped across broken glass. He gave Kira a sideways look. "Does this happen to you every time you change shapes?" She shook her head, laughing.
I'm better at it. When I was younger and first learning, I had a few unfortunate incidents, but these days the transitions are always very smooth. Donal came to rest in the grass beside them, cawed once, and then shifted into his natural state.
Not too bad, though, he said in an approving voice. It's hard to master flying. Even harder to do it as a moth or a butterfly. It's just so different from everything you know. Can we come back tomorrow and practice again? Justin asked.
Kira was amused. I am continually amazed that a man who expressed so much disdain for magic when I first met him...
That's before I understood how useful it could be, he answered, grinning.
Before you found out how much you enjoyed it, she countered.
That too.
She rose to her feet, and Justin followed suit, repressing a groan at the ache he felt in his thighs.
We can't stay, she said. I'm already a week overdue in Danilustris.
But you'll come back. I want to do that again.
She was still amused.
We'll come back, or maybe you'll be in Gosenhall again before long. I'm sure we'll be heading there once we've left Dannon Hall.
Till then, I suppose.
Till then.
She glanced at Donal, who nodded, and the dark man flowed into the shape of a wolf. Kira's own transformation followed, more choreographed, in some ways more unnerving. So much for a civilized goodbye. Donal had already turned his head north and was scenting the air, checking for danger on the route ahead. Kira stepped forward and butted her sleek, pointed head against Justin's leg, and he leaned down to pet the brushy fur.
Travel safely, he said. Thanks for coming by.
She nudged his hand again, then trotted to Donald's side. Without a backward glance, the two went racing off, chasing each other through trees and bushes. Justin untied his horse and rather carefully hoisted himself into the saddle. The return trip to Neft seemed even longer than the trip out.
Audible Frontiers presents Dark Moon Defender. Written by Sharon Shin and read by Joe Barrett.
Chapter 14. 4 days later, Eleanor was back. The intervening time had not been without incident, for more visitors had arrived in Neft. One was a Saramara of Nochlin, come to visit her sick aunt at the Gieseltes house. She was accompanied by her husband, a dark and intense man that Justin was pretty sure Kira and Seneth disliked. The second day they were in town, he left his wife's horse at the stables, took his own animal, and was gone a night and most of the next day. Justin found himself wondering if he had ridden out to Lumenon Convent, and whether Helcon Gieseltes and his entourage were still there. They had not come back this way. A red-faced and unpleasant-looking fellow passed through the next day. No one Justin recognized, though he heard someone call him Marlord Rayson. Justin guessed he was the man who held most of the lands in Fortunalt, and was commonly believed to be allied with Helcon Gieseltes in a desire to take the throne. Justin thought this must be the busiest little city in the south. He actually said something of the sort that night to Faber, who joined him in the Golden Boar for a beer as Justin was finishing his meal. The magistrate often worked his way around the tavern at night, having drinks with one table of men, playing a hand of cards with another group. Justin admired his style. A good way to get a sense of the mood in your town. A good way to show you were aware of what was going on. When Justin made his remark about the recent wave of noble visitors, Faber ran his hand through his unkempt gray hair, mussing it even more.
"We get all kinds of traffic through Neft," the older man said, giving Justin an unreadable smile. "Even some daughters today."
Justin kept his expression neutral.
"Daughters? Oh, you mean from the convent?"
Faber nodded, watching him. Saw them ride in this afternoon. So, if you're feeling chivalrous and you see any of them on the streets tomorrow... Justin pretended to laugh. I'll get my sword ready.
Faber toyed with his glass.
You want to be careful about getting too close to those convent girls, he said at last.
Justin narrowed his eyes. You warning me away from them or warning me against them?
Wouldn't seem as though they could do any harm to you, would it? Faber said. You'd think it might be the other way around. Men like you could take advantage of a young girl. But I don't think the convent guards take too kindly to anyone who gets interested in those novices.
Well, I guess I'll just have to watch myself then.
I guess you will.
Justin paid his bill, returned to his attic room to sleep for a couple of hours, and shook himself awake at midnight, out into the crisp night air. They were well into autumn now, and the nights were brisk, to move with a cat-like care through the quiet streets of the city. No matter what Faber had said, Justin had read it as a warning. I will be watching you. His own men might be out prowling the streets tonight, patrolling past the Gieseltes house, under orders to make sure Justin did not loiter there. But Justin was fairly confident that he could outwit any half-trained city guards who didn't know a damn thing about true combat. At any rate, he only encountered a few other late-night wanderers, none of them in the uniform of the city guard, most of them drunk, and none of them near the Gieseltes house. He stood in the shadows and watched the windows, knowing by now which one overlooked Sarah Paulina's room and which one was the guest room, commonly assigned to Eleanor. She would not be sure he knew she was in town, but she would look for him anyway. She would hope. In fact, he had only been at his post about 20 minutes when he saw a haze of white at the Saramara's window. He stepped forward, still half in shadow, but knowing that Eleanor's keen eyes would pick him out just by motion. He did not want to risk waving or making himself too visible in case the form at the window was not her. But it was. The glass was pushed back, and a body leaned out over the sill, gesticulating enthusiastically. He saw her turn her head back, as if to speak to someone in the room, and then she faced him again, holding up a finger. Give me 1 minute. She disappeared back inside and pulled the window shut behind her. Justin drew back into the shadows to wait, imagining the stealthy route she must take through the sleeping house. Who might be awake at this hour? The old lady, obviously, and probably a footman or two. Anyone who was restless or troubled and could not sleep. Justin hoped Eleanor had a story ready if someone caught her. No one did. A few minutes later, she was creeping out the front door, flying across the yard and letting herself noiselessly out the gate. Her hands were extended, so he took them in a strong clasp. She did not seem to mind.
Justin, how did you know we were here? I looked for you when we rode in, but I didn't see you anywhere.
Someone mentioned daughters coming to town, so it's not just you this time?
No, there are 5 of us. This time I'm not here to take care of Sarah Paulina, though she did ask to see me while I'm here. But we've all come to proselytize in Neff tomorrow and the day after.
What do you mean?
She casually pulled her hands away as she answered.
We'll walk through the town square and offer the benediction of the Pale Mother to anyone who wants it. We'll stop people who try to hurry by, and we'll explain that the Silver Lady can see their souls. Don't they want to do her honor? We'll give out moonstones to people who want them, and you'd be amazed how many people do.
Justin remembered riding through Neft many months ago, when the way was blocked by daughters who wanted to lay their hands on every passerby. Donal and Kira and Cammon couldn't endure the touch of those hands, covered with moonstones. There had been a short, ugly scene when the Lestra's men came asking questions.
Do the convent guards come with you and watch to see who shies away from the Pale Mother's benediction? He asked, a bitter edge to his voice.
Yes, she said. I hate it. I don't mind sharing the blessing of the Silver Lady. In fact, I rather like it, and so many people are quite grateful.
But when people turn away or hurry past or look over at us so afraid, and I see the guards watching them, I get anxious. I'm afraid of what might happen next.
And have you seen it?
Seen what?
He made a motion, as if he had suddenly pulled a hilt into his hand.
Seen what happens when the guards track down a non-believer.
I'm not sure they do, she said, troubled now. They're with us all day, most of the day, anyway, and surely they don't... I mean, there must be plenty of people here in Neft who... Not everyone loves the goddess.
I think your guards are looking for mystics, he said, in a hard voice. And they think anyone who won't take your benediction is suspect. And I think they follow some of those poor folks and question them in a pretty brutal way. I'm wondering if there aren't a few dead bodies littering the alleys on days after the novices come to town.
Oh, no, Eleanor said, seriously distressed. That can't be. The Lestra and her men abhor mystics, of course, but, I mean, they don't harm them. They don't... What are you saying? That the Lestra has them killed? Mystics? Justin, that can't be true.
You're living under her roof and you don't know what she's capable of?
But Justin, you're talking about murder. Yes, she despises mystics. All the daughters do. I listen to the rhetoric, but I don't know that it means anything. It's like my brothers talking about the men they don't like and how they want to hurt their enemies, but it's mostly just muttering and posturing. The Lestra doesn't... I mean...
He spoke in a gentle voice, because she was really upset, but his tone was uncompromising. Throughout Gilengarria, for the past few years, there has been a rising tide of distrust toward mystics. Your Lestra has been the source of much of that distrust. She has spread her doctrine of hate across the 12 houses into every small town and backwater farm from here to Brassenthwaite. Mystics have been stoned to death in city streets by common men and flamed by the words of the daughters. But the Lestra is more direct than that, he said, raising his voice when she tried to speak. As I rode into Neft 5 weeks ago, I came across a hut in the woods where a mystic woman was being tortured to death by 5 men. They all wore convent livery. They were there under the Lestra's orders. Now Eleanor was staring at him as if he had told her the worst possible news. Her house had been burned down. All her family was dead. No one she loved was left alive.
What happened to her?
She whispered. He did not particularly want to recount this tale, he suddenly realized. Did not want to tell his part in it.
She escaped, he said shortly.
And the men? The convent guards?
He watched her a good long moment before answering. Well, it had been inevitable. She was used to violent men, but she had made it clear she did not condone their ways, and if she knew him long enough, she would learn just how ruthless he could be. And then, even if she had liked him before, she would like him no longer. And he might as well tell her now and watch her walk away. If not tonight, some other time. Some other wretched day or night. Dead. 4 of them, at any rate, he said. She swallowed.
You killed them?
He just nodded. Then she surprised him.
Why not the 5th one?
He looked away. It was a boy. He looked... sick, horrified at what was being done. I didn't think he had a hand in her torture. I thought he wanted an excuse to run. I let him go.
Great blessed mother,
she breathed and fell forward into his arms. His hands came up automatically to enfold her. She was weeping bitterly against his chest. He didn't know what to say, how to console her, how to explain himself or apologize. He could not believe she had not picked up her skirts and raced back inside the house, away from him and his blood-stained hands. Instead, she clung to him for comfort, and he cradled her against his body. "Bright mother burn me," he thought. "She is so tiny and frail. If I hold her too closely, she will break." And yet, he drew his arms around her even more tightly. "I'm sorry," he whispered into her dark hair. "I thought you knew. I thought everyone knew. I'm sorry it was me who told you. I'm sorry I'm the one who stopped the guards. I'm sorry this is the truth of the world." It was a few moments before she was calm enough to speak, and by that time Justin had pulled them both to the ground and settled Eleanor across his lap. He had never done such a thing before, and yet it seemed entirely natural. He noticed that her feet were not bare tonight, though she wore only thin slippers. Still, better than nothing on a chilly night like this.
"I wish I didn't believe you," she said finally.
She was sitting sideways across his legs, her head against his chest, and he had to lean down to hear her quiet voice.
"But I do. I'll ask Astera tomorrow, and maybe she'll tell me that you've made it all up. It's not true, but somehow I don't think you'd lie to me. I mean, I know there are things you're not telling me, and I don't count that as lying. But about something like this, I don't think you'd mislead me."
"I'm so sorry, Eleanor."
"Anyway, I know it's true. We heard that 5 guards were missing and that some of the bodies had been found. Someone said something about mystics, but I thought it was mystics who killed them. I didn't know the guards were trying to do the killing."
"The Lestra wants to destroy them all. I'm sure there will be more murders." He thought of the scene he had witnessed, the convent guards burning down a nobleman's house, and decided Eleanor could not bear to hear that story tonight. "Coralinda Giseltes says she is carrying out the divine will of the Pale Mother." Eleanor stirred in his arms, but did not pull away.
"That's not true," she said.
"What's not true? It is what she says."
"Maybe, but I don't think... It doesn't seem to me... I don't think the Pale Mother is so cruel. She's a vain and fickle goddess, yes, but there's a sort of childlike quality to her. She wants to be loved and admired. She'll do anything she can to draw attention, but demand that people be killed? Any people? I don't think so. I just don't believe it."
Justin found himself, unexpectedly, amused. "And what would you know about the Silver Lady?"
A sound from Eleanor, almost a laugh. "Well, they're sisters, aren't they? All the goddesses? Where I come from, people worship the Dark Watcher, the goddess of night, and she is complex and difficult, and she hides terrible secrets, and I have known her to be cruel a time or two. But she doesn't call for anyone's murder. I don't believe the Pale Mother does, either. I think the Lestra must have misunderstood."
Eleanor's hair had come loose from its knot while she rested her head against Justin's chest, and now he ran his hands through it, slowly, absently, straightening out the tangles. The sliver of the moon had already set. There was not enough light to see the variegated patterns dyed into her hair, but he remembered them clearly enough. "Most people talk only of the Pale Mother," he said cautiously. "Only lately have I heard references to any of the other goddesses. The Bright Mother, the Wild Mother. I think there are others. But no one seems to know anything about them." She seemed to tense slightly, as if afraid she had given something away.
"I only know anything about those two," she said rather quickly. "The Goddess of Night and the Goddess of the Moon. I couldn't answer any of your questions."
He had plenty of questions, none of them about deities. He continued stroking her hair until she grew calm again, relaxing against him. "So you think the Pale Mother does not hate mystics as much as the Lestra does?" he said. "That's interesting."
"All the daughters seem to hate mystics," she said.
He kept his voice casual, his hand gentle, so she could not know how important this question was to him. "How do you feel about mystics, Eleanor?"
Have you been influenced even a little by the Lestrade's hate? But something in his tone gave him away, because she tilted her head back as if trying to see his face more clearly.
I don't think I hate anybody just on principle, she said. But why do you want to know?
He chose his words carefully. I have friends who are mystics, good friends.